Okay, let's jump right into this deep dive. Imagine you've got these incredibly complex physical systems you need to understand.
Right. Things like fluid flow, maybe through tricky geological formations.
Exactly, or how advanced materials behave under stress, or even, dynamics inside the human body.
Complex stuff.
And you have some real-world measurements, your observations, right? And you also have a sophisticated computer simulation, a physics-based model that tries to capture how the system works.
Okay.
Your mission: to figure out the hidden properties or parameters of that system, maybe the material stiffness or the ground's permeability.
The things you can't directly measure easily.
Right. You want to find the parameters that make your simulation's outputs actually match your observations. This whole challenge, it's called an inverse problem.
And inverse problems are just fundamental in so many fields. But here's where it gets really tricky, especially for the big, detailed systems we care about in the real world. The most accurate simulations, the ones we call high fidelity or HF models, well, they're brutally expensive. Running just one can take hours, days, sometimes even longer.
Wow. So you're trying to figure out parameters, which might mean running the simulation thousands, maybe millions of times.
Yeah, to really explore the possibilities.
And each run takes forever. That alone sounds like a showstopper.
Absolutely. But wait, there's often a second equally massive roadblock.
Oh.
The most efficient ways to solve these high-dimensional inverse problems, like, say, you're trying to figure out a complex map of properties across space.
Yeah, like that permeability map.
Exactly. Those methods often rely heavily on knowing the mathematical gradient.
The gradient. Okay, refresh me quickly.
Think of it like the direction of steepest ascent on a hill. It tells you how much the simulation's output changes if you tweak an input parameter and in which direction it changes
I
fastest.
got it. Like knowing which way is uphill.
Precisely. And for many complex simulation codes, especially older legacy codes, or ones that couple different physics together, like fluids and structures, getting these gradients is incredibly hard. Maybe even impossible, practically speaking. The code just wasn't built for it. It's effectively non-differentiable.
Right, I've heard about this, trying to derive those adjoint equations you'd need.
Yeah, for efficient
It
gradients.
can be a total nightmare. Requires such a deep dive into the simulation's guts, which for these massive, maybe slightly messy legacy codes, it's just not
And
feasible.
not feasible at all. And the alternative, trying to approximate gradients by just, poking the simulation, running it again and again with tiny changes.
Tonight, differences.
Yeah, in high dimensions, that hits the infamous curse of dimensionality. Because computationally impossible, just too many dimensions to poke.
So you're stuck. You've got these super expensive simulations, and you can't get the gradients you need for the efficient methods.
Caught between a rock and a hard place. So how do you solve these crucial inverse problems? Problems that might have seemed intractable before.
Well, that is exactly what we're diving into today. We're looking at a research paper that proposes a really novel way around these twin problems. It's called Bayesian multi-fidelity inverse analysis. BMFIA for short.
BMFIA. Okay.
And our mission, really, in this deep dive is to unpack BMFIA. We'll explore how it cleverly bypasses needing gradients from the expensive simulation, how it gets around that huge cost.
And see how well it actually works, right? Based on their examples. Can it really solve these tough problems?
Exactly. So let's really zero in first. Why is solving high-dimensional Bayesian inverse problems with these expensive non-differentiable models just so hard? Let's unpack those difficulties.
Well, like we touched on, the sheer computational cost is a killer. Standard Bayesian methods, they need to explore a vast parameter space.
Right, trying out lots of different possibilities for those unknown parameters.
Which means evaluating that expensive high-fidelity model thousands, maybe millions of times. And if each run takes hours, we do the math.
Yeah, you're talking computations that could take years or
Yeah.
longer, just not practical.
Not practical at all. And then the second piece, the gradient problem we discussed. Many of the most powerful inference methods, particularly when you have many parameters, like reconstructing those spatial fields,
Yeah.
they really lean heavily on knowing those gradients, that direction of steepest change. It helps them navigate the high-dimensional space efficiently.
And for a lot of these cutting-edge, complex, sometimes messy, real-world simulations, you just can't get that gradient information easily, or maybe not at all.
Exactly. The paper highlights why, right? Legacy code's not built for it. Really complex coupled multi-physics where deriving the adjoints is just too hard.
Or maybe even impossible.
Right. And finite differences are too expensive in high dimensions. It's a bottleneck.
Okay, so if the standard gradient-based methods are often out, what about other things people have tried? The paper mentions a few alternatives and their limitations.
Yeah, it does. A common idea is using surrogate models, sometimes called meta-models.
Okay, what's the idea there?
You try to build a faster, simpler model that basically mimics the behavior of your expensive simulation.
Like a cheap stand-in.
Kind of. It can work, sometimes. But building an accurate surrogate, one that really captures the complexity, that often needs huge amounts of training data.
Meaning lots and lots of runs of the expensive HF model anyway.
Exactly. Especially as the number of parameters you're trying to infer goes up. And another big issue with surrogates is they often struggle to properly quantify the uncertainty.
Meaning
the uncertainty that comes from the fact that the surrogate itself is just an approximation learned from limited data. You might get a fast answer, but you might lose that crucial confidence score. You don't know much to trust it.
Right. You get an answer, but maybe a false sense of certainty. Okay, what else?
Another approach is multi-fidelity sampling. These methods try to directly use cheaper, low-fidelity LF models within the sampling process itself.
Okay, using the cheap model more directly.
Yeah, but the challenge here is their efficiency often depends really heavily on a very specific statistical relationship between the cheap LF model and the expensive HF model, like how well they're correlated or the structure of the error between them.
So it restricts how you design that cheap model.
It can, yeah. It limits your flexibility. And often these methods don't support using gradients either, which, again, are key for efficiency in high dimensions.
Okay, so you need a specific kind of cheap model, and you're still potentially doing a lot of sampling without that gradient boost. Got it. Any others?
Well, there's physics-informed methods. That's a hot area, learning directly from the underlying physics equations.
Right, PINNs and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. They can be really powerful, but also very challenging when you have complex, coupled, multi-physics, high stochastic dimensions. And especially when you have to use an existing legacy code, you often can't just rewrite everything from scratch to fit the method.
Right. You can't just throw away your, million-line simulation code that's been validated over years.
Precisely. And finally, the paper mentions dimensionality reduction, techniques to cut down the number of parameters.
That makes sense. Fewer things to figure out.
It helps, sure. But it's usually not enough on its own. Often needs to be combined with surrogates, which brings back those issues of needing lots of data and quantifying uncertainty accurately.
Okay, so the landscape is tough, expensive runs, no gradients, and the alternatives all have significant drawbacks for these complex, high-dimensional problems.
Exactly, which sets the stage perfectly for BMFIA.
Right. Here's where BMFIA steps in with this new pass. What's the core idea? What makes it different?
The fundamental insight, the really clever bit, is don't try to build a complex surrogate model that directly maps your high-dimensional input parameters, let's call them X, all the way to the expensive HF output, YHF.
Okay, don't try that direct mapping. What then?
Instead, BMFIA leverages a simpler, cheaper, low-fidelity, or LF, model. But this LF model has one absolutely crucial property.
Let me guess. It can provide gradients?
Bingo. It's designed or chosen specifically because it is differentiable. You can get its gradients relatively easily, maybe via joints.
Ah, okay. So you're kind of outsourcing the gradient requirement to the cheap model.
That's a good way to put it. But it's not just using the cheap model directly.
Yeah.
Because we saw that often doesn't work well due to model discrepancy.
Right. The cheap model might be too inaccurate on its own.
Exactly. So BMFIA learns a probabilistic relationship between the output of that simpler cheap LF model and some extra input info, and the output of the expensive HF model.
A probabilistic relationship, like a mapping.
Essentially, yeah. It learns a map that captures how the cheap result relates to the expensive result, but in a probabilistic way, meaning it also captures the uncertainty in that relationship.
Yeah.
The paper calls this the multi-fidelity conditional density, written as PYHFZLF.
Okay, P of Y high fidelity given Z low fidelity. And what's ZLF again? You said LF output plus some input info.
Right. ZLFX is basically a package containing two things for a given input X. First, the output of the LF model, YLFX. Second, the input field itself, XX, but interpolated or evaluated at the same spatial points where you get the output YLF.
So the cheap model's result plus information about the specific input parameters you used right there at the output locations. Why include the input info too?
That's important. Including XX helps the learned mapping understand why the LF and HF models might behave differently, even for the same input X. It gives the mapping more context.
Got it. So you learn this probabilistic link, this map, from the combined LF output and input information, ZLF, to the HF output, YHF. How does that help solve the inverse problem?
Okay, so that learned conditional density, PYHFZLF, is the key ingredient. It's used to construct a new multi-fidelity likelihood function. Let's call it PMF, Yob's X.
A new likelihood function.
Yes. And this new function effectively replaces the need to run the expensive HF simulation every single time you want to calculate the likelihood in the standard Bayesian formula.
Whoa. Okay. So instead of, given these parameters X, run the super slow HF model to see how likely my observations Yogs are.
Right, which is the bottleneck.
You use this new, cheaper likelihood function, PMF, which is based on running the cheap LF model and using that learned probabilistic relationship.
Precisely. And here, this is the absolute kicker, the main advantage that depends on your input parameters X in this new multi-fidelity likelihood. It's now filtered entirely through the cheap LF model, MLF, and that learned probabilistic mapping.
And since the LF model was designed to be differentiable.
Exactly. Since you can get the gradient of MLFX, you can now get the gradient of the entire BMFIA likelihood, PMF, Yob's X, with respect to X. And crucially, it's cheap to compute.
That's the breakthrough. You need gradients for efficient high-dimensional inference, right? Hmm. But the HF model couldn't give them. BMFIA finds a way to get usable gradients by relying on the cheap, differentiable LF model instead.
That's it. You've got it. And what's really remarkable, the paper shows this probabilistic link, PYHF-ZLF, can be learned surprisingly robustly from only a small amount of paired HF and LF simulations.
Small. Like, how small?
In their examples, they use as few as 50 to maybe 300 runs of the expensive HF model.
50 to 300. Okay, yeah. That's actually feasible for many complex simulations. That's not millions. That's something you could potentially budget for.
Exactly. Suddenly, it brings these problems into the realm of possibility. And compare that to how much data a naive surrogate trying to map directly to YHF would likely need, especially in high dimensions. It's dramatically less.
Okay, that's huge. What else? Any other advantages?
Another big one is flexibility. You have a lot more freedom in designing that LF model. It doesn't have to be a super accurate predictor of the HF output on its own.
Right. We saw that in the problem description.
It just needs to have some kind of statistical link to the HF model enough for the machine learning to find a pattern. Mm-hmm. And critically, it needs to be differentiable so you can get those gradients.
So it could be like a simplified physics model, or maybe the same physics on a much coarser grid?
Exactly. Those are common strategies.
Yeah.
And what about uncertainty? Bayesian methods are all about understanding how certain or uncertain you are about your parameter values.
Yeah, that's crucial. You don't want an answer that looks precise but is actually way off.
Right. And that's a core feature here, because BMFIA learns that probabilistic link, PYHFZLF. It explicitly models the uncertainty, the discrepancy between the LF and HF models.
And what does that mean in practice?
It means BMFIA doesn't introduce bias into your final results.
Yeah.
The fact that your LF model isn't perfect or that the learned link isn't exact, that doesn't give you a confidently wrong answer.
And
instead, that model discrepancy and the learning error, they get reflected as increased uncertainty in your final BMFIA posterior distribution. The paper calls it a blurring. Your result might be a bit fuzzier than the ideal HF posterior, but it's honestly representing the uncertainty.
Okay, so it's like it gives you an accurate picture of what the expensive HF result would tell you, but maybe with slightly wider error bars or a bit more fuzziness to reflect the fact that you use this clever approximation, the shortcut, to get there.
Precisely. And that's much, much better than getting a sharp-looking result that's confidently wrong.
Absolutely. Okay, this sounds really promising. Let's dig a bit deeper into how BMFIA actually works. Can you walk us through the methodology, maybe following the algorithms in the paper?
Sure, let's break it down. The basic goal, remember, is standard Bayesian inference. Find the posterior distribution of your parameters X given your observations, Yob's.
Mm-hmm.
That's PX Yob's.
Which is proportional to likelihood times prior. PX times PX.
Right. And the issue, as we've established, is that the standard high-fidelity likelihood, POGUSX, requires running the expensive HF model,
yeah,
MHFX, which is too slow or maybe impossible if you need gradients.
Okay. And BMFIA replaces that expensive part.
Exactly. It swaps out the standard likelihood, POGUSX, with the multi-fidelity likelihood, PMF-YOBSX.
The one based on the LF model and the learned link?
Correct. Now, how is PMF calculated? Conceptually, it involves integrating over all possible HF outputs, YHF. You combine the standard model for observational noise, how your measurements yobs relate to the true HF output YHF, usually assumed Gaussian.
Okay, P yobs YHF.
With the learned multi-fidelity conditional density, PYHF ZLFX. That's the probabilistic link we trained.
I see. So it's like, for a given X, you run the cheap LF model to get ZLFX. Then the learned link tells you the probability distribution of possible HF outputs. And then the noise model tells you how likely your actual observations are, given those potential HF outputs.
That's the idea. Now, to make this practical, the paper makes a simplifying assumption. They model that multi-fidelity conditional, PYHF ZLF, as a Gaussian distribution.
Okay, bell curve.
Yeah. So for any given ZLS, the distribution of possible YHF values is approximated as Gaussian, with a mean MZLF and a covariance KZLF. These functions, M and K, the mean and covariance functions, are what the machine learning model actually learns from the data.
Got it.
And the neat thing is, if you assume the observational noise is also Gaussian, then combining these two Gaussian models, the conditional link and the noise, leads to a closed-form expression for the multifidelity log likelihood LMF.
Closed form, meaning you can just write down a mathematical formula for it.
Exactly. You don't need to do a complex integration every time. You plug ZLFX into the learned functions M and K, combine them with the noise parameters, and you can directly calculate the log likelihood value. Mm-hmm. That's very efficient.
Okay, that makes sense. Efficiency is key. But how do you learn those functions M and K? The mean and covariance of that probabilistic link. That's algorithm one in the paper, right? The training phase.
Right. How do we train the model for PYHF ZLF? It starts, as we mentioned, with generating some initial training data.
The small set of expensive runs.
Yes. You sample a relatively small number of input parameter vectors, XA 100 to 300, usually from your prior distribution, or maybe something designed to cover the parameter space reasonably well.
Okay. And for each of those sampled...
For each one, Zayinaki, you run both your cheap LF simulation to get YLFI and your expensive HF simulation to get YHI.
So you get these paired results.
Exactly. Then you combine the cheap LF output YLFI with the corresponding interpolated input field key, which is derived from ANIA, to form ZLFI. So your final training data set consists of pairs, ZLFI, YHFI.
Input for the mapping is ZLFI. Target output is YHFI.
Input for the mapping is ZLFI. Target output is YHFI. Correct. And then you train a probabilistic regression model using this data set. Its job isn't just to predict YHF from ZLF, but to predict the parameters of that Gaussian approximation for PYHF ZLF. That means predicting the mean vector M and the covariance matrix K, or variance vector V, if using diagonal covariance, for YHF given ZLF.
So it learns to predict the average outcome and the spread around that average. What kind of machine learning model do they use for this?
The paper uses a specific type. A probabilistic convolutional autoencoder. Figure 3 shows the architecture.
Convolutional autoencoder, why that?
Well, autoencoders are generally good at learning compressed representations or essential features of data, and convolutional layers are particularly well-suited for spatial data, like the simulation output fields we often deal with.
Images or fields on a grid.
So it takes ZLF, which contains both the LF output field and the interpolated input field as input. It processes this using convolutional layers. And the crucial part is the output layer. It's probabilistic. It doesn't just output a single prediction for YHF. It outputs the parameters of the Gaussian distribution, the mean vector M, and typically for stability with small data, a diagonal covariance matrix, which just means it predicts a variance V for each element of YHF.
Okay, so it predicts the most likely HF output, the mean, and how much uncertainty or variability there is around that mean, the variance, for each point in the output field based on the cheap LF result and the input info.
That's the intuition. And it's trained using a standard machine learning approach,
yeah,
minimizing the negative log likelihood. Essentially, you adjust the model's weights so that the Gaussian distributions it predicts make the actual observed HF data, YHI high, in the training set as likely as possible.
And they use standard tricks like dropout to help it train well with the limited data.
Yes, dropout, batch normalization, specific ways to parameterize the variance to keep it positive. Standard techniques to make the training robust.
Okay, so now we have this trained model. It can take a ZLF from a cheap LF run and predict the mean and variance of the corresponding HF output. We also have the closed-form multifidelity log likelihood function, LMFX. How do we actually solve the inverse problem now? Find the best parameters X. That's algorithm two.
Right. This is where having that differentiable likelihood LMFX becomes critical. Because it's differentiable, we can now use powerful, efficient, gradient-based inference methods.
The methods that were impossible before because we didn't have gradients from the HF model.
Exactly. The paper specifically uses a method called sparse variational inference, or SVI.
SVI. What's the gist of that?
Well, the true posterior distribution we're after, PMFX-YOBS, even with the multi-fidelity likelihood, can still be quite complex and high-dimensional. SVI is a way to approximate this complex target distribution with a simpler, more manageable one.
Like approximating a complicated shape with a simpler one.
Kind of. In this case, they approximate the target posterior with a simpler distribution, specifically a sparse Gaussian distribution. SVI works by iteratively adjusting the parameters of this simpler Gaussian, its mean covariance, to make it as close as possible to the true multifidelity posterior. And it uses gradients to guide this adjustment process.
Okay, so it's finding a good, tractable Gaussian approximation of our target parameter distribution using gradient information to get there efficiently.
Precisely. And to do that, it needs the gradient of our multifidelity log likelihood, LMFX, with respect to the parameters X.
And that gradient is cheap now, because LMF depends on ZLFX, which is built from the cheap LF model output MLFX and the input X.
You got it. The chain rule tells us that XLMF involves the gradient of the learned conditional model with respect to ZLF, multiplied by the gradient of ZLF with respect to X, and the gradient of ZLF involves the gradient of the LF model XMLFX, plus gradients related to X, which are simple.
And XMLFX is provided cheaply by the LF model's adjoint.
Exactly. That's the magic. The dependence on the expensive non-differentiable HF model, and its impossible to get gradient, is completely removed from the iterative inference loop. The heavy lifting for gradients is shifted entirely to the simple LF model, where it's easy.
That is really clever. So what does the SVI process look like in practice?
It's iterative. You start with an initial guess for your approximate Gaussian posterior. Then you repeat. Sample some parameter vectors X from your current guess. For each X, run the cheap LF model to get YLFX and evaluate the input field X to form ZLFX. Pass ZLFX through your trained conditional model to calculate the multifidelity log likelihood LMFX. Calculate the gradient SSLMF using the LF adjoint and the gradients of the conditional model, which are typically available via automatic differentiation in ML frameworks. Use these gradients to update the parameters of your approximate Gaussian posterior, nudging it closer to the target.
And you repeat this until the approximation converges.
Yes, until it stabilizes. But the paper also mentions an optional refinement. You can periodically take some of the X samples generated during inference, run the expensive HF model for them, and add these new ZLF, YHF, pairs back into the training set for the conditional model.
Adaptive learning. So as your guess about the important parameter regions gets better, you can collect a few more targeted HF samples to refine the learned map specifically in those areas.
Exactly. It allows the model to improve its accuracy where it matters most for the current inference task.
Smart. And they also detail the prior they use for the spatial fields.
Yeah. They use a common choice for spatial fields called a hierarchical Gaussian Markov random field prior. It basically encourages spatially smooth solutions. And they mention handling hyperparameters like the level of observation noise using a technique called variational Bayes expectation maximization, or VBEM, which fits them automatically during the inference.
Okay, the whole methodology seems very well thought out, but you mentioned earlier BMFIA isn't magic. There are approximations involved. Let's talk about potential pitfalls or sources of error.
Right, absolutely. The paper is quite transparent about this. One source of approximation error comes from modeling that multifidelity conditional link, PYHF-ZLF, as a Gaussian.
The real relationship might be more complex than a simple bell curve.
It could be, yes. Using a Gaussian is a pragmatic choice, especially with limited HF training data. More complex models, like maybe mixture models or normalizing flows, could potentially capture the link better, but they might also be much harder to train reliably and could become unstable, especially when you need their gradients for the SVI step.
Right. Simpler models are often more robust when data is scarce. That makes sense. What's the other source of approximation?
The other key one is potential information loss. Remember, we're filtering the high-dimensional input X through the LS model and input features to get ZLF. ZLF might be, in some sense, a lower dimensional representation than X itself.
So some information about how X influences the HF output might get lost in that filtering step.
Potentially, yes. Some fine details might be smoothed out. This loss of information doesn't introduce bias. It doesn't systematically push your answer in the wrong direction, but it manifests as that blurring effect we talked about.
increased uncertainty in the final BMFIA posterior compared to what the true ideal HF posterior would be, if you could compute it.
Exactly. You're not getting a wrong answer and being told it's right, but your certainty bounds, your credible intervals, might be wider than they ideally would be with infinite HF data.
Which is an honest reflection of the approximation being made.
Correct. The paper has a nice illustration of this concept in Figure 5, looking at two extreme cases.
Oh yeah, what are they?
Extreme 1. Imagine the LF and HF models are perfectly related. Maybe the LF model is just a slightly scaled version of the HF. In this case, ZLF captures everything important, there's no information loss, and BMFIA perfectly recovers the true HF posterior.
Okay, best case scenario.
Extreme 2. Imagine the LF and HF models are completely statistically independent. The LF output tells you absolutely nothing about the HF output.
The cheap model is totally irrelevant.
Right. In this case, ZLS provides no useful information about YHF. The learned conditional density, PYHF ZLF, would just be noise, basically ignoring ZLF, and the resulting BMFIA posterior wouldn't learn anything beyond the prior information. It fails gracefully, you could say.
Which makes sense. If the cheap model has no connection to the expensive one, it can't help you.
Exactly. The usual scenario for real problems, of course, lies somewhere in between these extremes. There's usually some statistical link between the LF and HF models, even if it's complex. BMFIA works well as long as that link is learnable. And including the input features, X, as part of ZLF, is crucial for helping to mitigate that information loss. It gives the conditional model more context.
Okay, so the bottom line is BMFIA doesn't introduce bias, but it correctly quantifies the uncertainty that results from the Gaussian approximation and the potential information loss due to filtering through ZLF.
Yes, that's a key strength. Reliability.
All right, theory and methodology covered. Let's see this thing in action. The paper has two really compelling examples. Tell us about the first one, the porous media flow problem.
Okay, this first example is a bit simpler. It's designed to really test the core BMFIA concept and, importantly, allow comparison to the true HF posterior, which they could actually compute in this more controlled 2D setting.
And the goal?
The goal is to infer a 2D map of permeability, basically. How easily fluid flows through the ground based on some simulated measurements of fluid velocity within the domain.
Standard inverse problem in hydrogeology. And the HF model is the expensive non-differentiable one.
Yes. They use standard porous media flow equations, solve with a finite element method mesh, and they treat it as non-differentiable, meaning they assume they can't get its gradients easily.
Okay. And the LF model, or models.
Right. They actually use two different LF models here to test robustness. Both use the same underlying porous media equations, but solved on a coarser mesh, making them faster. And crucially, they deliberately introduce model discrepancy by using different pressure boundary conditions compared to the HF model.
Ah, so they're intentionally making the cheap model somewhat inaccurate representations of the true physics in the HF model.
Exactly. One LF model has a moderate discrepancy, they call it LFM, and the other has a deliberately bad discrepancy, LFB. You can see in Figure 7 how different the flow fields predicted by LFM and LFB are compared to the HF prediction. They look quite different.
So the really challenging BMFIA, can it work even if the cheap guide model is significantly flawed?
That's the question. And importantly, both of these simpler LF models are simple enough that their adjoints, their gradients, can be easily derived and computed.
Okay, what was the speed difference? How much faster were the LF models?
Table 1 shows the LF models were about 6.9 times faster per run than the HF model in this case.
Okay, a decent speed up per evaluation. How did they set up the BMFIA process? How much HF data did they use?
This is where it gets impressive. They trained that conditional autoencoder using only 100 initial paired HF LF runs. Then they did two small refinements during inference, adding just 10 more pairs each time. So in total, only 120 expensive HF simulations were used for the entire training of the conditional link.
Wow, only 120 runs of the slow model. That's really practical. And the inference step?
The SVI inference loop, which does the actual work of finding the parameter distribution, used 4,000 solver calls. But remember, these were all cheap LF calls using the LF model and its adjoint.
Okay, 120 expensive training runs, 4,000 cheap inference runs. That's a massive shift in where the computational work is done. So what were the results? Did it work?
First, they showed in Figure 8 that the trained conditional model, even when using the bad LFB model as input, could actually do a surprisingly good job of predicting the mean of the HF output. It learned to correct for the LF model's flaws, at least on average.
Interesting. It learned the translation.
Then came the main comparison. the inferred permeability fields. They compared the results using just the LF models alone versus using BMFIA with either LFM or LFB versus the ground truth result obtained using the expensive HF model directly in the Bayesian inference, which they could do for this simpler problem. That's figures 9 and 10.
And the verdict. How did BMFIA stack up?
Well, first, the posteriors obtained using only the cheap LF models were, frankly, terrible.
As expected, maybe, given the model discrepancy.
Yeah. They showed huge bias. The inferred permeability maps didn't look anything like the true field, and they completely underestimated the uncertainty. Basically, using the cheap, flawed model by itself for inference gave a useless, misleading result.
Okay, so just using the cheap model isn't enough. What about BMFIA?
The BMFIA posteriors, using either the moderate LFM or the significantly bad LFB, were in excellent agreement with the true HF posterior.
Even with the bad LF model.
Yes. It's quite remarkable. They accurately captured the mean shape, the key features of the true permeability field, and importantly, they captured the correct amount of uncertainty. The posterior variance matched the true HF posterior variance very well.
That's seriously impressive. It means BMFIA successfully used the flawed LF model as a guide, learned the correction needed, probabilistically, and recovered the result you'd only expect to get from running the expensive model thousands of times.
Exactly. It shows the power of learning that multi-fidelity conditional link. It effectively filtered out the bias from the LF model while leveraging its cheap gradients.
And what about the overall cost savings?
Table 3 quantifies it. Compared to running the full HF Bayesian inference directly, BMFIA achieved about a 6.3x to 6.8x speedup in total wall time. A significant chunk of the BMFIA time was spent on the initial training phase, those 120 HF runs, which can often be parallelized effectively.
So, faster, and it produced results equivalent to the gold standard, whereas the naive, cheap approach failed completely.
That's a takeaway. It demonstrates that BMFIA works, it handles model discrepancy well, and it delivers accurate results efficiently by relying only on LF gradients.
Okay, compelling proof of concept. Now let's move to the second example. This sounds like the real stress test, the coupled nonlinear poor elastic model.
Yes, this is where BMFIA tackles a problem that's much closer to the complex, real-world scenarios where it's truly needed, and arguably a problem that was previously impossible to solve using standard gradient-based Bayesian methods.
Why impossible?
The goal is again inferring a permeability field. But this time, the underlying physics, the high-fidelity model, is far more complex. It's a dynamic, coupled, non-linear, poroelastic medium. Think of soil or tissue that deforms as fluid flows through it, and that deformation changes the flow, and the flow changes the deformation. They're tightly linked.
Okay, complex, coupled physics.
Highly complex. Solved with advanced finite elements, nonlinear solvers, time-stepping. And the absolute key here is that for this kind of complex, coupled, perhaps legacy code, an adjoint formulation is practically unavailable. Mm. You simply cannot easily get the gradients of the HF simulation output with respect to the permeability field.
So traditional gradient-based inference methods that rely on those HF gradients are completely off the table, just not an option.
Exactly. Impossible. Plus, the HF model is incredibly expensive. Table 5 shows it took about 419 seconds, nearly 7 minutes per single forward run, even running on 16 processor cores.
Wow. Okay. So impossible gradients and extremely slow runs. The perfect storm for BMFIA. What did they use as the cheap differentiable LF model here?
This is quite clever. They actually repurposed the previous porous media flow model from the first example.
The simpler, uncoupled, steady-state flow model.
Exactly. It's just standard fluid flow through a porous medium, ignoring all the solid mechanics, coupling, the nonlinearities, the transient dynamics of the true HF model. It uses the same domain geometry, but the physics is vastly simpler.
And crucially, that simple LF model does have easily derivable adjoints.
Yes. They already had the adjoint for that simple model. So it provides the cheap gradients BMFIA needs.
And the cost difference must be enormous here.
Huge. Table 5 shows a simple LF model runs in about 0.2 seconds on a single core, compared to the 419 seconds on 16 cores for the HF model.
Mm.
Well, the speedup per run is massive. They calculate a cumulative CPU time speedup around 33,500x and a wall time speedup around 2,095x.
Orders and orders of magnitude cheaper? Okay. But how can BMFIA possibly work when the LF model is missing so much crucial physics? The coupling, the dynamics. Surely the LF output looks nothing like the HF output.
You're absolutely right. Figure 13 shows the comparison. The flow fields predicted by the simple LF model are completely different, much smoother, more spread out, compared to the complex, localized, transient flow fields generated by the coupled HF model. The LF model on its own is a terrible approximation of the HF physics here.
So the model discrepancy is massive.
Massive. Yet this is the amazing part. They train the conditional autoencoder using 300 paired HF-LF, runs this time, still a practical number given the HF cost. And the SVI inference used 10,000 cheap LF solver calls.
And the conditional model could still learn a useful link between these vastly different outputs.
Astonishingly, yes. The probabilistic autoencoder still managed to capture a meaningful statistical relationship between the ZLF, derived from the very wrong LF model, and the true YHF output, even with just 300 HF samples to learn from.
That's incredible. It learned to bridge that huge physics gap.
It learned the transformation, probabilistically.
Mm.
The paper does note an interesting practical point here. They tried using more complex state-of-the-art deep learning models like UNETs or Fourier neural operators for the conditional link, but found they were unstable with respect to the gradients needed for the SVI step.
Ah, so the simpler convolutional autoencoder, while maybe less powerful in theory, was actually a better practical choice because its gradients were more stable and usable for the inference algorithm.
Yeah. Exactly. A necessary trade-off for robustness in this gradient-based framework. They also mention in Appendix D that trying a direct surrogate approach, mapping X straight to YHF with this complexity in only 300 samples would likely fail completely. The multi-fidelity approach was essential.
Okay, makes sense. So the moment of truth, the results. How did the inferred permeability posterior look in this incredibly challenging case, figures 14 and 15?
Again, they compared the LF-only posterior, using just the cheap model for inference, to the BMFIA posterior. And again, the LF-only posterior was, in their words, completely unsatisfactory.
Failed again.
Utterly failed. It couldn't capture the true permeability field at all. The model discrepancy was just far too large. Using the cheap model alone gave nonsense results.
Okay, and BMFIA?
The BMFIA posterior. It's remarkable. It successfully restores the localized features of the ground truth permeability field, which, remember, would be unknown in a real application. And looking at the credible intervals in figure 15, it almost perfectly encapsulates the true field within its uncertainty bounds.
Wow. So even though the LF model's physics was completely different, BMFIA, guided by those 300 HF runs, managed to produce a posterior distribution that accurately reflects the location, shape, and uncertainty of the permeability field consistent with the expensive, complex, non-differentiable HF model.
Precisely. It used the cheap LF model purely as a source of gradients and structure, and relied on the learned conditional link to correct for the massive physics gap, quantifying the resulting uncertainty appropriately.
And the cost savings here are really enabling, right? Not just faster, but making it possible at all.
Absolutely. Table 6 estimates the speed up compared to a hypothetical HF-SVI run if HF gradients were magically available. Depending on parallelization assumptions, the speed ups range from maybe 65x to 158x in wall time. But like the authors say, the real story isn't just the speed up factor, it's the solvability. BMFIA, by relying only on the readily available LF adjoints, made this previously intractable inverse problem solvable.
That is genuinely incredible. It takes a problem that was stuck, impossible gradients, prohibitive cost, and provides a practical path forward using a limited number of expensive runs to build a bridge, then leveraging a much cheaper, simpler, differentiable model.
It really feels like a paradigm shift for tackling this specific but very important class of challenging inverse problems.
Okay, let's try to sum up this deep dive then.
Yeah.
BMFIA, Bayesian multi-fidelity inverse analysis, it really seems like a powerful, well-designed approach specifically targeting these tough inverse problems cursed by expensive, non-differentiable, high-dimensional simulations.
I agree. It directly confronts those twin challenges, the computational cost and the lack of usable HF gradients that have blocked progress in so many areas that rely on complex simulations.
And the key takeaways seem to be, first, efficiency. It dramatically cuts costs by shifting the bulk of the computational work to the cheap LF model, needing only a relatively small number of expensive HF runs, mainly for training that conditional link.
Right. Second, solvability. This is maybe the biggest one. It enables gradient-based inference for legacy codes or complex coupled models where HF gradients are unavailable, simply because it only needs gradients from the simpler LF model. It unlocks previously locked problems.
Okay. Third, accuracy. Despite using approximations, it provides remarkably accurate estimates of the true HF posterior distribution, even when the LF model itself is quite inaccurate. And crucially, it does this while correctly quantifying the resulting uncertainty. No false confidence.
Exactly. And fourth, flexibility. It gives you significant freedom in choosing or designing that LF model. It just needs some statistical connection to the HF and, importantly, needs to be differentiable.
That captures it really well. And the paper points towards future work, too.
Yeah, they mentioned several interesting directions, things like automatically optimizing the selection of those initial HFLF training points to be most informative, exploring other machine learning architectures for the conditional link, maybe finding ways to make more powerful models stable enough for gradient-based inference. Also, incorporating more physics knowledge directly into that learned conditional model, perhaps. And, of course, applying BMFIA to even larger real-world 3D problems. They mentioned biomechanics, like modeling lungs or tumors, and civil engineering applications, where these complex, non-differentiable models are very common.
It feels like this approach creates, as you said, this clever shortcut. It navigates the complex, high-dimensional landscape of unknown parameters using a fast, simple guide, the LF model with its easy gradients, but constantly corrects the path based on a learned probabilistic map, the conditional model trained on a few detailed observations from the expensive HF runs.
It's a really elegant combination of cheap physics-based models, expensive physics-based models, and targeted machine learning to bridge the gap. A significant step, I think, toward unlocking scientific insights from complex simulations that were previously just too hard or too expensive to use for this kind of inverse analysis.
So thinking about the implications for you, the listener, imagine being able to get much more precise diagnoses based on patient-specific simulations of blood flow or organ mechanics, or designing safer bridges or aircraft components by inferring material properties from complex stress simulations under real-world conditions.
Or managing groundwater resources more effectively by understanding subsurface flows better. All derived from combining complex physics simulations with limited real-world data, using insights that were previously locked away by computational cost and non-differentiable code. BMFIA really helps bring that advanced simulation-based inference closer to practical reality.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Bayesian multifidelity inverse analysis. We've explored the really significant challenges in solving inverse problems with these expensive, often black box simulations, and we've seen how BMFIA offers a practical, efficient, and surprisingly accurate way forward by cleverly combining simple models, complex models, and smart machine learning.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. We hope this exploration gave you some valuable insights into how researchers are pushing the boundaries to tackle previously impossible computational problems.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.